Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson. There is no Maureen today. It's weird. It's fine. Like, we're gonna be fine. We're gonna get through this. It's weird. But I'm joined with, like, as far as, like, I'm bringing all the negative to the table here, and I'm joined with Sydney Ray and Emily Cox to talk about Wild Party over at Piven Theater. So thank you all so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, no problem. We've already just been, like, chatting our ears off.
I know, it's been a good time.
Moody is in lap, perfectly so.
She's not going anywhere, man. She's totally balanced right now. She's perfectly happy.
Yeah. How was your day?
It's good. Mine is good. You know, Didn't really do a whole lot. Just worked a lot on Wild Party.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, cool. Finishing those little lines that get interspersed between all of the music, because the show is, like, I don't know, 90% music, 10% dialogue, if that.
Nice.
It's almost through composed, too.
Yeah.
The way that it's done. So that it's really hard to, once you get started in an act, it's really hard to, like, separate it up. So if you're going to start looking at it, you may as well go through the entire act and figure out.
There are tiny breaks in the movement, in the movements and all the music that really, like, called to light all those little pieces of dialogue.
Cool. Well, how about give us the pitch? Like, let's hear about it, because for people that, like, don't know, like, I didn't know anything about Wild Party until I saw that you were in a show, and I was like, let's do that.
It's goddamn delightful.
It is indeed a wild, wild, wild party.
Cool. So it's a musical that's based off of, well, there's two different musicals. The one that we are doing is with Music for Theater Chicago is going to be the Andrew Lippa version, which is the off-Broadway version. So people know them either as the on-Broadway or off-Broadway. So we're doing the off-Broadway version, the Andrew Lippa version. And it was based off of a book-long poem that came out in the 20s, 1928. First in Boston. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page because I wanted to make sure that I knew exactly what's going on.
And I'm seeing, is that a library edition?
This is the library edition. It's the Wild Party, which is...
Shout out the public library.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh, they're amazing.
Yeah.
I've been there 3 times in the last week.
Nice. They republished it in the early 2000s with Art Spiegelman, who did Mouse. So he does all the art drawings and stuff. But... I encountered it because I had a friend who was like, you'll really like this musical, you should read it. And then I read the poem, and it was amazing.
I actually listened to an interview that Art Spiegelman did with, I don't remember who he did it with, but it was a Broadway talk.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how he was so influenced by the poem, and he was decided to redistribute the poem with his drawings intact. And I just thought it was incredible and inspiring. And he was talking to Broadway Talks about the poem and his drawings, but as well as the two productions that were going on that were inspired by the book that he published that he found way back in the 70s and talked to somebody else about. So it's just like this incredible conversation that's happening in the 1920s when it first came out, and then it was banned, and then it came back in the 1970s, and then Art Spiegelman found it, and then he talked to his other people about it, and then it became two Broadway musicals at, like, the exact same time.
So the book, and you're saying the book was banned. So what was the reason why the book was
being
banned?
It's salacious. Oh, it's horrible. It was basically everything that you were not supposed to be doing in the 20s.
It's during Prohibition.
First of all, it's they're all making bathtub gin, but they're doing cocaine. There's an open lesbian who's in it. There's a lot of there's a communist who's a member of the group. I play the hooker. I'm very openly a hooker. I'm half Jewish, half black in the show, apparently, according to the poem. But it's just a collection of, like, the misfits of society who get together, and they live this really decadent Art Nouveau kind of lifestyle. But it's really violent. Like, there's this undercurrent of desperation and alcoholism and depression and violence. And in the end, it really comes to a head. So it was sort of used almost like a morality poem. But because it was highlighting such a decadent lifestyle, they banned it.
Okay.
And then it became infamous once it was banned. You know, once they tell you that you can't have it, then everybody wants to read it. So it was incredibly successful.
Do you feel like it was just a matter of, like, general prudishness? Was there a certain note that it hit that made it, like, that kind of Do you know what I mean?
I think it was normalizing drug culture at the time. There's a lot of cocaine in the show. There's a lot of cocaine in the book. There's a lot of, like, it's just, it really normalizes some of the darker sides of humanity.
Cool. Well, and then, so, it then was, this was the thing that was really interesting to me about the history, and something you touched on already, but it was, it then inspired these two musicals, right?
Yeah.
At the same time. And, I mean, is there any tie to why the did the two people that were doing them at the same time know each other? Like,
I do you don't know? Know. One of them is by, I'm not going to say his name right. You know what? Let me Google it because we're sitting here. I can never pronounce his name correctly. One was by Andrew Lippa. And he
Lucuzia?
Yeah. And then Lucuzia. And then the other one was by Lucuzia. And what they did was they both came out like within a couple blocks of one another on and off Broadway, two different theaters in the span of no more than like a month apart, which was fascinating. And the on-Broadway one had Eartha Kitt and Mandy Patinkin in it, and it was a hit. But the music in Andrew Lippa's was much more ensemble-based. Like, as we're on stage the entire show.
Yeah.
Once we're on stage, we don't leave. So we leave at the end, right in the last, like, 2 minute and 34 second long song, and we miss the first song, which is about 4 minutes, and then the rest of the show, which is 2.5 hours long, we're on the stage. So it's much more ensemble based, but it's really interesting because everybody plays a different character that's fully fleshed out in both versions, but they're very different. This one is a little bit lighter. The Lucuzia version tends to be a little bit darker and a little bit angrier, I think. I'm looking at Sydney like, yeah, what do you think?
It's been a while since I listened to the Lucuzia version, so
Sydney's playing Kate, who is an awesome character.
Well, yeah, so let's get into the like plot itself. Yeah, tell us about your character.
My character, her name is Kate, and she's kind of part of this love quadrilateral. And she is what I would consider to be like a super flapper. She's kind of into everything. She is super into independence, but she, you know, has this whole song about her backstory. You know, whether or not it's true, like, is up for question sometimes. But it's just her, you know, she is a cocaine addict. She's a call girl. She is a dance master. She's pretty much like the, like, a Renaissance woman of the 1920s. And she is best friends with Queenie, but she also adores Queenie's husband, and then she brings in this new character, this new friend called, his name is Mr. Black, and he comes in and everything sort of just starts to throb within the party.
Interesting. So my first curiosity is, so how, relatable would you say it is culturally? I mean, does it rely a lot in that kind of like 1920s, 30s aesthetic experience, or do you think that there is like a prerequisite of familiarity with that culture to latch onto what's going on? Or
I don't
think so.
I think that there are so many human concepts in the show that, you know, you're just like, oh yeah, I remember making out with somebody at a party like this once. So yeah. Like, oh yeah, I remember when I did that over there. So like, I think that it's very, very relatable characters, and you know, it's just like that internal struggle of like, maybe I'm meant to be with this other person, so the person that I'm with right now, or maybe I've grown into a different person to begin with, and you know, I've been with this person for X amount of years or days or minutes, and you know, my life has changed considerably within, you know, that either compact or expansive amount of time.
Right. Well, no, and it's this idea of like what we imagine when you think of like the term, like the idea of a wild party. It sounds like it's very much exploring just this kind of like nebulous, very like changing thing that is also like so hyper relatable. That so my curiosity is when, you know, that I feel like that kind of perceived notion of like what it is, like what like true debauchery, like true, who's the Greek Bacchus, this like bacchanal of just like it's all like drug use, substance abuse, just, you know, all of these things, other things than the two things that I mentioned that are very similar. But so my actual question is how do you find that comes out in the character work? Like, as you're developing the characters, the nuances that you're trying to work through in your character, what does that like look like for you? How is there a different foundation that you feel like that character works from? Does this make sense?
I get what you're trying to say. What's interesting is that the party is... I'm trying to think of how to say this. It's sort of a switch. You think that the party is the focus of the evening, and then that's the big event, because the name of the poem is The Wild Party, and everybody's attending the party. And the interesting thing is that the focus of the piece is not on the party. The party is just a result of what happens. Yeah. The focus of the piece is actually on all the characters. In the poem itself, you know, he takes a lot of time to go through and individualize and give you backstory on every single person who attends. Even the mysterious person who's with the lesbian that evening. I forget mm-hmm. her name. Sally, mm-hmm. who mm-hmm. isn't in this musical. And in the other musical she's there, but she's just a brief little appearance. She's just yet another partner for this woman who goes through women like water, you know?
Yeah.
But even as someone who's just there as kind of a side note to be an accompaniment to another character, she's fleshed out. He takes a lot of time to make them very human. So the party is the result of all this tension that's been building between all the characters that you're mm-hmm. watching. So it's sort of an afterthought. And in the grand scheme of the evening, so much stuff happens.
Right.
It starts out where we're with Queenie and Burrs, and that's how we open the show, is that, you know, Queenie meets Burrs, and you learn a little bit about who she is as a person before she meets him. You learn a little bit about Burrs before he meets Queenie. The two of them meet, and now they're happy together, right? And that's how the first song ends. When the second song picks up, we learn they've been together for almost 3.5 years, and now they're not so happy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody can relate to being with somebody who... at first, you thought they were, like, the love of your life, and they fulfill your dreams, and it's amazing. And then after, you know, so many years, your romance kind of cools a little.
Mm-hmm.
And they've now entered that phase where they're kind of bored with one another. And we learn there's a lot more going on underneath the surface. There's a little bit of domestic violence. There's a little bit of, you know, drug use. He's obviously got anger problems. So to make up for a fight they have that morning, they decide to have a party.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the party is a result of the tension between the characters.
Right. Well, that really sets up... so that's kind of... I think you are going to help me really understand what I was trying to say before. Which is that, like, the idea of each... it seems like there are just so many things that are, like, traditional play narrative techniques. Like, each person has entirely their own narrative. And if you look at it... all at once, like if you just try to look at the forest instead of just the trees of each narrative, it seems like it would just be a nebulous wash of like chaos, when in reality it's these like linear narratives for each person. And so my curiosity for y'all as people that have worked in different kinds of theater and different kinds of plays, do you feel like that's like a heightened refinement of the tradition of narrative storytelling, or do you think it's completely flipping that on its head?
I'm gonna let you take this because you do a lot more theater.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
I think so. So what you're talking about is you've got the forest and the trees, right? And so each linear line is each individual story as the forest is sort of an encompassing story. And you're asking if that is what we are seeing, or if that's...
That's a good question for this piece.
It is for this particular piece. But see, there's the entire ensemble also plays the Greek chorus.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, to me, it seems very, like, even... it's traditional with a modern twist.
Yeah.
But even so, the modern twist is that they're singing and dancing and narrating and also taking part in different characters and also becoming different parts in the main character's songs and helping to, like, really drive the momentum of the piece. Because if it was just those four characters, it wouldn't make as much sense.
You kind of need the forest, and you need them to have individual trees at the same time.
That's so interesting. But where the forest is just the party itself, the entire night, if you will.
But what's cool is that we're working with Tim. What's Tim's last name?
Is it Roz?
I believe so.
R-H-O-Z-E. And
he's a very distinct style with this piece. Like, we're doing it where we're all in black and white and gray, so we look like an old photograph. Everything on the stage is in black and white and gray, so it's okay. Almost as if an old photograph from the 20s came to life and is moving, and you're watching like a black and white film, which is really cool. And that kind of provides you a little bit more distance because we are doing it in a black box, so it's going to be very in your face. So you'll be like forest, and the tree will be right in front the whole time.
Well, but I guess that's kind of where that almost can create a wash, though, too. Do you know what I mean by that? Not like a wash, but kind of like that distance that you were talking about.
Well, he's very particular with the way that he does it, though. Like, sometimes, like when Sydney was saying we're in the Greek chorus, we're in the background. We will literally be holding the props, and the people who are singing will walk by and take them out of our hands. So at that point, we fade into the background. But then we actually have lines or parts of the song where we come out and we're seen, and then we fade back in the background again. And then when we become our characters, we actually are very, like, distinct as characters, and we're very alive. But then we also, again, fade in and out of... It's almost as though... I don't know about you guys, but when I was in my young 20s, I was dating a guy, and I had a very strong group of friends that we were all, like... We all partied and hung out together. And when it came time to break up with this guy, it was almost like you were breaking up with your friends, too.
Sure.
Because you're all so strong, and your relationships are so strong. So I was having a talk with Tim, and he was saying that he feels like even when we aren't in the room, we're always present in Queenie and Burr's thoughts because we are such a tight-knit group. So what's cool is, like, we're almost like ghosting in and out of the scenes. Like, we're always in their mind. So in some of them, you don't know if we're actually present or if we're, like, just in their head.
Mm. Well,
this cat is so tiny.
I know. She's so
tiny. She's so tiny. I'm sorry, she was sitting in my lap this whole time, and she's just weighs nothing.
Well, tell me a little bit about the music.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Really?
Yeah, I think I personally really dig it. I think that it has moments that are just so graceful, and you just, like, but that are so, like, cathartic. Mm. And then you get, like, you know, the 1920s jazz feel, and then you have, you know... It's just,
it's
then
hard.
You have, like, gospel in there somewhere, and it's definitely like a hodgepodge. But I think that if for every moment that it because Burrs and Queenie and a lot of their friends are also performers, and so they've have it, like, experience in all of these different, like, some of these different styles, and so I think that Lippo really calls upon a lot of those styles,
definitely,
and leaning on the concept that also they're performers, and so they would also know these styles. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bit where we sing a brand new song that's called The Wild Party, right?
Yeah.
That's the one, right?
It's an amazing... The ensemble numbers are so...
So strong.
Amazing.
They're strong and they're fun.
They're cute.
They're, like, fun to listen to, and they're fun to watch everybody dance. Like, I don't have any lines in The Wild Party, and I'm just like, yeah, this is great! Time. I need another drink. I'm the Nile, and let's snort some coke. Why not? Maybe. I don't know. That choice has not been made yet. But
whether or not there will be coke.
Oh, well, during that moment.
Oh, okay, the show.
Maybe it's before the moment. I don't know. I've not plotted out my coke substance, like,
this is yet. How, times so forever in the
how
show.
Do you come? All right, so this is a weird question, and tell me if I shouldn't ask this question.
Okay.
Have either of you done coke?
No, and that's what I was going to...
I haven't!
I know! So we actually had to have, like, a day where we sat down as a cast, and we're like, who here has actually done cocaine? Okay, can you teach the others how to do this the right way? Because
right, and what is
we
it?
Clearly is it? Don't know what we're doing.
Sorry, is that my phone? Probably.
Oh, I don't know.
So that's kind of my curiosity is...
Well, you know, you do some research, and...
Right.
You figure it out.
And, like, what does the body... how does the body react? Like, what is a logical way in which the reaction that the script calls for?
Yeah.
That it happens, you know what I mean?
And like, it's a studio apartment that they live in. Like, mm-hmm. So not only do we not leave the stage the whole time, but it's, I mean, we're very visible.
Yeah.
So everything that the ensemble is doing at all times, we have to make a strong choice.
Right.
Like, there's no let up.
Well, that's the thing is, like, when you bring in substances, like, specific substances that have, like, so when we did the Giovanni, there was a decision made that, look, I was playing Leporello, and that Leporello was going to be a heroin addict. And it's like, that's a, like, you gotta know, I remember I was like, I don't know that, I feel like meth would be easier than heroin for a character like I'm sorry for anyone that's never heard opera, I just realized I'm, like, going down a weird path. We'll come back, I'll figure out a way to come back.
Back to the forest later.
Yeah. But, like, the idea...
We're in the trees right now, man.
Of, like, one substance being more realistic for a character to use than another, like, heroin, you're, like, flat on your ass for, like, days. And that's just, like, a basic understanding of, like, how the... My point with all of this is just to say that I'm very appreciative, as a performer and both an audience member, of the idea of an actual respect for what the... And not to say that, like, there's a difference between putting a substance on a pedestal and having respect for what the substance does.
It was really permeable in the 20s. I mean, it was definitely part of the party culture and the vaudeville culture.
What did I looked up the other day where they used to put coke in, like, baby teething drops.
What?
Yeah, like, medicinally, they used to put it... I'll have to find it.
Well, I know they used to drink Coca-Cola because they thought that it would settle your stomach. Wow. And it was good for you. It gave you pep and energy.
Yeah.
I will tell you that there is a lot more drinking than there is drug use in the show. We're not glorifying drug use by any means, but luckily for my castmates, I've been doing a lot of exploration of drinking in the past couple weeks. So you guys are welcome. I know my choices are very strong. I've now figured out, you know, martini is good for my character study.
Right. What about mixing martinis and cocaine? Is there like a crossfading thing that happens?
Well, and we were laughing over, like, It's permeable in the show, and it's definitely there, but the focus of the show is much more on, like, just the relationship
between characters. Right.
And Burr's mental health is a big part of it, too, because Burr's is deeply disturbed. Mm. And that puts that hinges on, like, the entire evening hinges on his almost mental breakdown.
Yeah, so this really...
And our actor, Chris, is killing it.
He's
nice.
Like, it's so good.
I'm understudying Britton, who's playing Queenie, and Britton is nailing it. Nice. Oh my god, Britton Gebrant, guys, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, so tell me a little bit about Sensitivity 2, because it sounds like Sensitivity 2, like, communities, let's say. I'm trying to think of the way that this is best phrased. Like, the idea of... playing someone who's going through mental health issues and it not coming off ableist, or the idea of, you know, portraying substance abuse, or portraying potentially maybe alcoholism. Like, I don't know the plot super well, so I don't know which specific things maybe this is a thing of. You know, I generally think, even generally I think about it with, like, feminism and racial issues, where it's like, when we're looking at things from a different time when things were treated differently, but looking at it with a modern lens, are there things that that have been made a point to be a certain way after revelations of... I specifically was thinking about that with mental health, because I think there's been so many developments in mental health in the last few decades of what someone was that you potentially called disturbed in the 20s, what that actually might... I mean, there's so many different diagnoses
now. He's almost... I don't want to say schizophrenic. That's the wrong word I'm looking for. It's almost like... What is that where you have, like, not multiple personalities, but you have a distance between yourself and... It's not sociopathic. What is it? They did the whole Girl Interrupted show about it. It's a dissociative personality disorder.
Oh.
It's almost like he's dissociative. But at the same time, he's very... I don't know what it is. We'd have to have Chris here to be able to talk about it. Yeah. He's... what's really good about the piece, for being written at the time that it was written, because in the past, like, I think almost in the past 5 years, there's been so much more interest in mental health and development in that field. But you can very clearly plot his Burz's like slide down throughout the course of the mm-hmm. evening, and Chris is making such specific choices as a character with it.
Right.
And the way that he's handling it, both in his expressions, his vocal patterns, the way he moves.
Yep. Yeah, all those things.
Like, and Kate partners with him, and you're phenomenal. And I watch you from my, my position on the floor. I'm on the floor. You. But you're, the choices that you make and the reactions you give him really mirror, like, not only what he's doing, but how everyone else around him interprets it.
Well, so what's kind of the feel in the Pippin Theater? Because now that when you mentioned the floor, are there levels going and on the stage? Or
it's a black box. It's a very small,
tight space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, when, 69? 70?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's I mean, very it's small crowds. House? And they will sell out, guys. It's kind of
half-thrusty, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like a...
Kind of.
Like it's a diamond.
Am I remembering that? Right? You
surround... It's almost like like a diamond. Yeah. And the audience is on two sides of the diamond. There's a wall on one side and then the pits on the other. So right. We are right up front and center in your face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the staging has been made very consciously to get you to where you feel like the audience will be taken to the edge of the mm-hmm. action.
How long's the run?
It's going to go from the 7th of September through the 10th.
Okay.
One weekend.
Yeah. But we're already anticipating selling out because they did Spring Awakening there. The company, Music for Theater Chicago, has only mm-hmm. been around since 2000.
Three years?
Yeah. And in 2016, they started doing full-length musicals and cool. cabarets. And Christy runs the company. Christy...
Charles Twilley?
Yes.
She's
I never
amazing.
Pronounce it correctly. Oh, yes. She's brilliant.
Yeah, she's our music director, but she also is doing choreography, and she's an amazing dancer.
She's an amazing dancer.
Yeah.
And she was very careful with putting together this cast. She put together an amazing... we were talking about this earlier. There's not a bad...
No, it's completely well-rounded. Everybody is acting and reacting. Everybody's collaborating together. They're going like, oh, you need another drink? I have a bottle. Here we go.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a lot of props.
There's a lot of props.
Yeah.
So many props.
But
and you need people that are able to improv off of props, too, I think.
Yes.
It's important for something like that.
I'm in love with it. I love the process. I came home from rehearsal the other night and I was like, this musical is feeding my soul.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it makes me, it's so draining, but it makes me so happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll like go to bed and I'll be like singing somebody else's song.
Right?
Like, oh yeah, where am I during that part of the show? Oh, yeah,
it's always Burz's song.
That's what I'm watching.
It's always Burz.
I always have like Queenie or Burz or like Wild Party or just like different snippets going through my brain at night, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is just stuck in my brain forever. Like, there's just like,
it's definitely an earworm.
Go to sleep.
Musically, like, it's hard. This is the first musical I've been in a while. I'm totally gonna say this. This is the first musical I've done in a while. I had to look at the music more than a couple times.
Yeah.
Like, generally, as classical musicians, you learn it and you memorize it very quickly because it's in English.
And also, you haven't just been doing a lot of classical music lately. For the last, like, 2 or 3 years, you've been doing a lot of new music, which is, like...
Yeah.
Where so the bar of, like, looking at a thing is a lot more different when you start doing new music because you know you have to look at least three separate occasions.
Yeah.
Like, if I pick up a role or something like that, not a role, but, like, if I'm, like, oh, I'm going to look at an aria that I've kind of looked at a couple times before, like, a song... you can pick it up once and then kind of like go let it play in the back of your head for a little while. But with new music, you like have to pick a time that you're going to make sure you actually learn it. Then pick a time to like make sure you have the nuances down. Then pick a time that you actually like refine the memorization of it, you know?
Lipa's got a lot of jazz in this.
Yeah. And just key changes, time signature changes.
Sudden key changes. Massive time signature changes. We were all talking about a dance the other day and we couldn't figure out what the counts were, and I was like, oh, because it goes from 6-4 to 12-8 to 2 back to 4, guys, so we can't count to 4 and make it work.
Yeah,
like I was the old crone in the corner
and y'all are dancing.
My stand like a dance instructor.
Yeah, y'all are dancing too, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
so like, yeah, it's
so much dancing.
Oh yeah. And we're all doing it in our costumer is amazing. We got our costumes. Everything is fringe. Everything is like pearls. There's a ton of sequins.
Sparkly.
But we're also wearing like vintage lingerie, which found, which is a ton of fun. Because like
cool.
you put on your costume and that's your outer layer. But to put on like two or three layers of your costume. It's almost like you're building your character on your skin. It's really cool.
Cool.
I really liked all of the lingerie that she brought in.
It was really beautiful. It's wonderful.
Oh, it's really beautiful. So let's see, underwear, cocaine. What else have we covered? This is a great advertisement. Scandal.
Emma Cox episodes are always fun because, like,
family friendly.
Get through so much of the time allotted.
It's really, it's not a family friendly show. I will tell you that.
No. It's very mature content.
It's very adult. Like, he screams the word fuck how many times during the show? At least twice.
Shit. Yeah. It's just, man, it's not even necessarily even just the language. It's more so the bawdiness of it, the scandal. Like we were talking about, the drugs, the alcohol. I would say, like, at the very most, like, PG-13 rated R.
I'm not telling my students to come see it. I tell my students every time I perform, and I'm not telling them about it, so.
Mm-hmm. I'm making sure to put disclaimers on all the students that I would be like, normally hey, be on Facebook and post, like, this is not for
which is funny, because it's not
young audiences.
It's not a happy show. It's one of those, you know, people love musicals that are happy. They like Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yeah.
Or they like, this is not a happy show, but the music is so beautiful, and the characters are so, you just, everybody's a horrible person. Every single person is almost like an anti-hero.
Yeah.
But you like them. Because they're so, like, I don't know.
You want to cheer for them.
I definitely cheer for Kate.
You want somebody to win. Like,
somebody has to win.
Who's going to win? Who's it going to be?
Who's it going to be?
And you don't know who it's going to be. I mean, obviously, unless you've seen the show before, but even then, if you've seen the show before, you're still pulling for him. They're all kind of underdogs, and you want Queenie to leave Burrs, and you want Black and Queenie to get together, and you kind of want Kate and Burrs to get together, because somehow that makes sense, but, like, it really doesn't, so, like, we'll see how long that would ever last. Forever.
Forever. It's really interesting, like, somebody was pointing this out the other night, Black comes in, and he's an outsider. Mm-hmm. So Kate brings, like, the whole gang gets together and they're all hanging out. And this stranger arrives in the middle of the evening. And he's the one who's the catalyst that kind of throws the whole evening off. And at first you think, oh, he's the good guy, like, thrown into the middle of the evening with all these bad people around him. And then you realize he's a bouncer at a bar. Like, he came from Chicago, and he moved from Chicago to New York. And he's, in Harlem, or where are they at? Like,
Uptown. He lives in Uptown.
So
Uptown.
In New York in the 1920s. Cool. So, like, he's not an angel either. So even the people that you think are, like, the good, pure people in the show, once you start to learn about him, you're like, oh, no, actually,
I think Nadine might be the only, like, but she's also the minor.
She's also the minor. Oh, yeah, there's a minor there, too.
Yeah.
And everybody spent...
Wait, like a coal miner?
No, like a minor.
Underage.
Like,
okay.
So that's the thing. Like, you watch this whole... Like, you're rooting for...
Was your face at me that I thought you thought I was like...
Minor? That was my face for you.
No, I was
minus,
like...
Minus, not minus.
Coal mining? What? Like...
His face was great.
Guys. So, like, you watch Nadine, and Nadine is, like, trying to navigate her way through
She's
this...
trying to figure it out.
...evening full of, you know, adults, and they're drinking, and they're debauchery, and everyone's trying to get something from everybody. So Nadine's trying to, like, work her way through and figure out what it is that she wants and take care of herself. And you're also watching, like, this woman practically stalk her, but you're also cheering for this woman because she sings this great song about being lonely and wanting to be with somebody, so...
And, like, where are all the great love stories about lesbians anymore? Like,
God, it's such a... And Jen is killing that song. Oh, my God, she's so good.
Yeah.
She's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I think you will be pleasantly surprised with how, like funny and sad. It just takes you through a whole sort of roller coaster of emotions. Well, it takes me through. I know that
it's exhausting.
It takes me through a roller coaster of emotions. And it's just like the audience, we're just taking them down the path in the forest.
So how has doing this like musical affected you in this day and age? Like, how do you, like, I just feel like, I don't know, I don't always mean to bring it to this area, but I always think about, like, just the nature of the world we're living in right now. Like, I just know, you know, I find more and more that people are constantly in need of relief, you know. How do you think this accomplishes that?
I think it has something to say about inclusivism. You know, mm-hmm. this is a gang of people that's very varied, but it's also very tight-knit and sort of exclusive. Mm. And when they sort of self-implode and you watch them self-implode all evening, and they have really complicated relationships with one another because they've been around one another for so long. And I personally, I'm taking it as a reflection of the Chicago scene. I'm mm-hmm. like, there's so many beautiful, varied performers, but still the world is very small, right? Mm-hmm. We all kind of know one another. So when somebody new comes into the evening or into the pack, it takes a while to kind of acclimate to them. So that's how I'm relating to that in terms of that. I don't know that there's a really strong political statement other than that that I can think of.
I personally think that this, because in the 1920s, 1930s, there's this rush of feminism. Mm. And we're seeing yes. a second rush of feminism, I feel like, right now in our era, in our day and age.
Yeah.
And I think that there's just a strong push for, I mean, I feel like the only thing is that we're, like, I personally think that we're focused more on the equality than, which is what feminism is. Mm-hmm. Is the equality between the two genders, right? And I think that there's a lot to be learned from our 1920s stories about feminism and gender equality and equality in general. Mm-hmm. I think that's an important reflection to remember as we're doing this show.
Yeah, and I mean, I think weirdly the 20s were like way more radical.
There's some alpha females in the show, man. I can't think of a single... Maybe Nadine.
But she's the opportunity to grow into her alpha feminism, you know?
I mean, everybody else is very, very strong.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah, actually... Oh, my God, I'm so glad you said that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, but that's kind of like...
Sydney for the win! Woo! Kate coming in clutch!
Heavens are roaring. Finally. but yeah, that's what I think that why, like, this, like, to me, I feel like this story is important to tell in a concept of our generation
right now. Because it's so intimate, too. Like, you're going to experience this in the dark, sitting with only, 60 other people? I've been on L cars that had way more people than that. Like, almost double the amount of people than that. So, it's like, as a group, you're going to go through and experience this evening together. There is a giant emotional rush in the second act. I mean, you get little ones in the first act, but then there's a giant one in the second act. And then at the end, I think everyone's going to kind of come together and leave together. There's mm-hmm. something to be said about an audience that experiences something together. Mm-hmm. Particularly if it's for their first time. Mm-hmm. It's a really demanding show. It isn't done a whole lot. Like, I haven't seen a lot of theater companies do it.
Why do you think that is?
It's musically really difficult. It's vocally really difficult.
It's like, very demanding, yeah.
It's very demanding.
But also, the dancing is very demanding, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like the 1920s, 1930s was, an epoch of... Mm-hmm. Of dancing in general. You have Charleston. It's just like all these great dance moves coming on. Like, that's what people did. They didn't have the internet. They didn't have the TV. They didn't have... I guess they had some movies, but mm-hmm. I don't know what the movie scene was like in the 1920s.
It's a really specific piece. It takes a really specific cast to do it. Because, like, one of the shows that a lot of the people are doing these days are, like, Into the Woods, which is a huge ensemble, right? But within the ensemble, you have the definitive, like, characters. So these people can be a strong character actor, but they don't have to sing a lot. Or you have the definite singers. So this person really has to sing well. And then you have, like, the ensemble that can be a jumble. You don't have that in the show at all. Mm. Everybody has to be, like, a triple threat on point. Mm. Like, even if you're in the background, even if you're an ensemble member, even if you're whatever, you have to be on point all the time. So we were really lucky that we found such a...
Solid cast.
Yeah, well, you were mentioning about this show that it's more ensemble driven than the other. Is there just generally kind of like a ensemble, what's the word I'm looking for? Like,
They're different. The Lacusa version, the ensemble members, every single character has their own song.
Yeah.
Like, which I think was interesting. Oh. The Lacusa version is, the one that was on Broadway, has less focus on Queenie and Burrs. This show is almost 70% Queenie and Burrs.
And then the rest is kind of that.
Like, Queenie sings almost every number.
Right.
It's crazy. And then the chorus, when the chorus comes in, it's these awesome, bright, flash numbers and ensemble. But then we're on stage the whole time. Yeah. Whereas in the other version, the Lacusa version, we have our individual songs, but there aren't as many ensemble numbers. Mm-hmm. So I think Lacusa took it as, like, almost when you were turning the pages and reading the poem, how everybody had their own individual, like, slot. Mm-hmm. But then they were kind of in the background for most of the movement. Whereas this one is, we are very much a traditional Greek chorus, but we are right there in the action all the time.
Do you think it's more... First. Do you think it's easier to relate to the ensemble than to the main plot, the Queenie and Burr?
Oh, that's a hard one.
Well, I think that it's hard to know because everybody brings, obviously, as an audience member is going to bring his or her experience, too. And so somebody might really attach themselves to Dolores and be like, yes, I have that drive. I want my things to be seen by a Sam Himmelstein. And, you know, like, I like her sass and you know, things like that. But other people might be like, Nadine was totally me. Like, I was the wallflower. I didn't know what I was doing. I was the minor at the party. What maybe wasn't really the minor, but I felt like a minor. And, you know, like, but I think that you'll also attach yourself to the heartache that Burrs is feeling. And, you know, the heartache that Queenie is feeling and the heartache that, I mean, Black says it in one of the songs, like, or worse, brokenhearted, like, don't let me leave. I don't remember.
Don't let me leave so saddened or worse, brokenhearted.
Yeah.
I think. So. I'm not understudying for Black.
I didn't mind his music. And then, like, Kate is just trying to figure out what she wants. And so mm-hmm. I think that all of the characters have
definitive qualities. Goals.
Yeah. Isn't that the amazing thing about great ensemble work? Like, it makes me think of, like, Brandon and I have been watching New Girl again. Have you ever, either of you watched New Girl?
I've only watched, like, most of the first season.
That's totally fair. It's definitely one of my, like, guiltier, let's go this route. Like, Game of Thrones is really ensemble driven, I feel, too. Where, like, you can, because they kill everybody off, they have to have so many characters. But they're able to way more explore the, like, humanity at all, you know?
Okay, yeah. So you know the grittiness? Like, everybody loves Game of Thrones, right?
And except there's people who don't watch it.
Except for people who don't watch it, but we don't talk to those people.
We forgive them, and I forgive them.
I will introduce you one day. Sit down, tape your eyelids,
make it. It gets more and more daunting. There are certain things that, like, to start it, you know, like,
but
I started
it. But you're invested in those characters. Mm-hmm. And some of them have made mistakes, and you don't really like them because of those, but you're invested in them, right? And
but
you have emotional
attachment. For some of them, this isn't the case, maybe. So for some of them, there are mistakes that you've made, you know?
Yes.
Like,
but that grittiness and that underlying feeling that violence could strike out at any moment, mm-hmm. that's the wild party.
Mm.
It's Game of Thrones the musical without dragons or leather or Westeros or swords.
So with drugs, alcohol.
We're basically all Tyrion. Yeah. We drink and we know things. That's all we do. And we sing about it.
Cool.
Actually, we should do Game of Thrones the musical.
I'm sure it's been a parody. Yeah, no, it's and there have been like there have been parodies about it. There are two that I know of.
Are y'all caught up?
Yes.
So we have 5 minutes of interview time. Then we do the 1 minute plug. Do you want to do a 5 minutes from now? Like, so what I'm saying is, do you want to talk about sport? Do you want to talk about the show?
Do we want to nerd out for a second?
Is that terrible? We can totally not do that.
I don't know about you. Sydney, I don't know you as well as I feel like I should. I'm a total nerd. How much of a nerd are you?
I'm an emerging nerd. Like,
an emerging nerd?
I'm an emerging nerd. Not a virgin nerd, no.
But it's like a young artist program. There's emerging, and then there's professional track.
I am in the first tier of my nerddom. I can tell you things about Game of Thrones. I've read the book so far. But I can't tell you anything about Star Trek.
Here's for me.
I got you covered.
All right. Well, Star Trek questions go to Emily.
Yeah.
For everything else, not everything else, Emmy.
We own all the original Star Trek episodes in my family. My younger brother was raised on Godzilla and Star Trek.
Maureen gets mad at me because she keeps trying to get me to watch Firefly.
I own it. I will loan it to you.
It just came off of Netflix.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not on Netflix anymore. So if you need it, I don't have it, but my significant other has it, and Emily has it now. And I live over there, so I'll just walk over there.
Cool.
But it broke my heart. Oh, it's so good.
I first started.
That's what I've heard.
That should be a musical too.
I'm sure it is somewhere.
That's the reason why it's hard for me to watch it is because I've heard that it's so heartbreaking. And like, I just.
Oh my God. Heartbreak is worth it.
I believe that. I just like, I want to do that to myself when I know I can handle it most. And I feel like I've just been especially now that I'm like trying on this like journalist for life hat. Where, like, I'm just trying to keep up with everything going on.
You're bleeding every day 50 million times from 50 million wounds.
It's sad exhausting. World. Yeah.
You need to be.
Well, that's what we were talking
about. Yeah. The priest that just died. You need him.
Yeah.
Oh, God. They bring you back all the time. Thanos?
The, like, random nameless people deaths.
Okay, wait a minute. Right? We were on that rock. Okay, spoilers.
5 minute mark. Spoilers. Go from here. 5 minutes ahead if you want to catch the plug. We're going to talk about where you can get tickets for Wild Party and where you can find out about Wild Party.
We are watching, and I am so excited. I'm sitting on my hands, and I'm next to Vince, and every time like we watch, I keep hitting him or squeezing on his leg because I get very excited. And we're watching, and people are like getting killed during that massive, awesome fight, which I was such a nerd. I read about that. It was... Do you know what they did? They taught them an alphabet of moves. Everybody had 12 moves that they lettered. And as they were swinging at people, they said they literally just sent all these extras at the actor. I'm doing motion because this is podcast gold. So if you can imagine me doing these wide sweeps with my arms. And then the fight choreographer would call out a random letter. And everybody had different moves that associated with that letter. So he'd be like, K, and they'd all swing, or an A, M, J, and they were, so that's how they made that scene look real. Because they were like, you can't choreograph chaos. It's always going to come off as like slightly unrealistic. So to make it really chaotic and unpredictable, nobody knew what anybody else around them was doing in terms of like swings.
Right.
And so all of them were different.
Right.
But that's how they organized it.
That's awesome.
But so as they're running at them on this rock and they're fighting, people keep dying. And at one point, I looked at Vince and I went, wait a minute, who is that guy? Wait, who died there? Was that guy with him the whole time? Like, I felt like more people ended up on the rock, falling off the rock, dying than were originally on the rock. I don't know.
Yeah. And the other thing that's really hard for me is they clearly spent millions of dollars on that episode in production.
Oh, yeah.
They couldn't spend more than $100 on the plot.
Because,
like, what was that? Like the first off, the entire premise of we're going to go into the white and we're going to get a zombie. Why? What is that? Like, that's not...
Seeing is believing.
It didn't make sense. There had to have been a better reason for them. If they needed them to go to the north, then you've got the whole, like, this just ridiculously unbelievable thing where they're far north in this, like, ancient burial ground. Gendry's gonna run back to the gate, send a raven...
Gendry.
To...
Olympics 2012,
yeah. Yeah.
Long distance running for Westeros team.
Send the raven from Eastwatch to fucking Dragonstone, where Daenerys is. Then Daenerys is gonna fly all the way there over the course of, like... I mean, I don't know the distances.
12 minutes.
Gendry's legs match his arms because he had to row in a fucking rowboat to shore, right? I forgot all about that until somebody mentioned that. And they were like, yeah, you were rowing. And I was like, oh my God, they left him on the ocean in a rowboat. Mm-hmm. And he rowed against the tide back into, like, But I believe
I'm glad he's back.
I'm glad that we are not debating the fact that there are ice zombies or dragons or a made-up land. We're just about like, the timeline.
The constant Deus Ex Machina thing, too, though.
Yeah.
Which, like, I... Don't get me wrong. Like, it's such a cool visual when the when Benjen comes in with the, like, flaming mace thing. Like, it looks really cool. But it's just like, so he's been living for, like...
He came in, and I went, where the fuck has this guy been the whole time?
6 years that he's been there, probably, or something like that, however long the show has been going?
The first thing I thought, and this is because I'm retarded, but I was like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't use that word. Is it because I'm like, totally ridiculous? The first thing I thought was, how did he pee up north? What did he eat, and how did he pee? Like, because everything's frozen. Everything's freezing over, and they're out, and they're exposed, and they're dying. And I was like, first of all, where did he sleep? What did he eat, and how did he pee? Because I had to pee at that moment, so that was my first thought. I'm glad I shared that. Now the healing can begin.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah.
But it was very satisfying when the hound put that white on the dragon.
Yeah.
It was just, like, a satisfying crunch, and that, like, skeleton rattling wiggle. Hound.
I just,
you're gonna get it.
I feel
who
like
who's gonna win the Clegane Bowl?
The Clegane Bowl.
Have you heard of this?
Yes. I have not heard it called that.
Yeah.
But I'm a big hound fan.
So yeah. Me too.
Like, I am too.
Plus, you're rooting against the zombie at that point, which is awesome. Yeah.
But I kind of feel like these episodes could easily have been 2 hours long apiece. I feel like a lot of the problems that they're doing is because they're trying to wrap them up so freaking fast.
They're
now the big holes and they've been so good about being so precise and consistent.
Yeah.
For those, you know, two seasons where nothing fucking happened.
That's the thing that I think just pacing is kind of wrong. Because, like, you have those two seasons where, like, so spread out and like nothing happened over the course of the episodes, and then it's like, well, then we really should go faster, and it's like, maybe just find a middle ground where it's like you're not trying to jam pack an entire season in 7 episodes or trying to stretch out a season into 12 or whatever.
If they had done it in 12 episodes this season, it would have been
amazing,
perfect. It's almost, but if you're gonna do 7, then they need to be 2 hours long.
Honestly, I'd be fine.
Are you listening, George R. R. Martin?
9. I'd be okay with 9 episodes.
I'd be okay with 9.
Like, I could see that making sense. Like, there are times where maybe the however many episodes they were doing before were too long, but I don't know.
I just don't know how they're going to wrap everything up in 7 more episodes.
Well, I always thought that one of the plot lines were going to end by the end of the season, meaning that either the Cersei or the White Walkers plot. I thought it was going to be the Cersei one, and so, like, it would make sense to me if in the next episode something crazy happens and
the High Council of the Ring episode,
the Cersei, like, the Cersei plot.
See, Cindy, you got that.
Excuse me. No, I missed that.
Yeah, thank you. Does that, do I get another, do I get a, like, get a little
another,
patch?
Get
do I get
another
a little pin?
Sticker.
A little
sticker?
Oh, thank goodness.
Your nerd
my
chart.
My nerd chart is probably maybe 1/3 full.
You rack up enough points, you can go equity nerd. But we only are going to offer to you once. Then never again.
It's fine.
We should wrap up.
Yeah, okay. We should do a plug. Sorry, guys.
So, welcome back for everyone that's... Hopefully it's been 5 minutes. Sorry if it's been more. Hopefully you find this moment. I'll give it a... So this is the moment. No now.
This is
no, this
the
one.
Moment.
This is... We're back. The last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1 minute plug for anything they have upcoming. Sometimes it's very obvious, like when you're doing a show at the Piven Theater called Wild Party. If you were doing that, that's something that could happen now. Otherwise, it can be things that are other people you think are doing dope work, general self-care stuff, books, articles that you're reading, TV shows you're watching, all of that good stuff. So,
cool.
Take it away for both of you.
Well, we are doing
The Wild Party.
The Wild Party, obviously.
At Piven Theater.
In Evanston, September 7th, 8th, 9th at 7:30 p.m. And September 10th, it's a 3 o'clock matinee.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets, you can go to musicfortheaterchicago.com. That's music for theater, spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E, chicago.com, all one word. And you can buy the tickets right there on the page. Do grab them because we are guaranteed to sell out.
It's a really limited run with a limited amount of seating. So if you have any interest in whatever we just talked about, this podcast, get your tickets and get them soon, because they won't be around for long.
Other than that, Sydney, you go first. Tell them anything else you're involved in, or any like.
To put some more stickers on my nerd chart. I just finished Iron Fist yesterday.
Oh, okay.
And so I started The Defenders last night. I am on episode 3, and I am really enjoying it. Book-wise, the only book that comes to my mind right now, one that has really, I guess, changed my view on getting old, is a book called Being Mortal. I read it through my book club. It's by Atul Gawande. He's a geriatrics doctor who has really just, like, really changed my outlook on talking about getting older and also being able to talk to my parents about getting older.
Yeah.
And I have a brother who's autistic, and I oftentimes worry about him getting older as well. And so it's really game changed my ability to talk about it with people, and particularly with my parents and with my siblings.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's on my mind. Emily?
I'm totally gonna be selfish. I love how you were being like loving.
Should I be selfish? No. I also have another show coming.
Yes, true. That would be so bad. I'm like, I have shows. And you're like, this is important.
Let's see. I am doing Spoon River Anthology with actually Corey, who is also in it, who is playing our Mr. Black. I was doing that with Edge Theater. That's what I have coming up. It's coming up in October. It is a play with music. It's a lot of monologues about these people in a graveyard that are dead, and there's like a lot of jazzy New Orleans grunge music. It's gonna be very exciting, and that comes in October. You can like my Facebook page if you want to hear more about the other stuff that I'm doing. Sydney Ray
on Facebook. Cool.
I am doing obviously I'm doing Wild Party, and then the week or weekend after that, I think it's a week and a half after that, I'm in Main Street Operas. Cavalleria Rusticana and Pagliacci. It's a double bill. That's going to be September 15th, 16th, and 17th. And then September 23rd, we're doing a special one at another place. But that's generally at the Forest View Education Center Theater in Arlington Heights. You can go to mainstreetopera.org. for tickets.
Cool.
After that, I'm doing Berta in Barber Seville with Petite Opera, and those are gonna be every weekend in November except the week of Thanksgiving.
Cool.
So that's coming up. So lots of opera, lots of singing.
Good.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Main Street Opera is, we haven't started rehearsals for Barber, so I don't know a lot of my castmates there, but the cast for Main Street is phenomenal. Stan DeSwickle is in it. He's playing, I call him Pagliacci, but his real name is Canio.
Yeah.
Nobody knows him as Canio. He's playing Pagliacci the Clown. And then Arnetta's rock. Like, the singing is good enough that I listen to these phenomenal young women just like, kill it, and then I immediately went home and went back into the practice room. That's the level of talent in that cast, is that I was like, this is gonna be great. I need to practice.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. You're gonna be awesome.
I am an ensemble member, so I say important things like, oh no, and oh, the bells.
Those are the best lines.
And the important line of, she was dead the whole time. Which is not actually in the plot. I just made that up. But
cool.
Yeah, it's very nice. Also, if you are doing Game of Thrones the musical, please call me.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to audition for Arya. That'd be great.
Arya, yeah.
I'd be a great Arya.
I feel like you're a little too tall for Arya.
I'll get on my knees. I'm going to make it work.
Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson. Maureen's at work. Send her all positive thoughts because, you know,
general service public.
Jobs. Service jobs. Thank you all who came out last... Yeah, you'll... This is coming out Wednesday. So last night to our Scoppy Sessions with Desiree Miller, Marissa Abbas, Ross Crean, Gretchen Adams, and Jordan Kreiss. That went really super well. Pretty good, solid turnout. The videos will be up pretty soon. You can catch that on our YouTube and on the website. Generally, if you want to keep up with what we are up to, the best way to do that is head over to scoppybag.com. That is our website. We post all of our podcast episodes there, all of our Scoppy Studios as well, any of our videos for our Scoppy Sessions. You can head over to the different tabs and check that out. I just kind of retooled it, which is cool. On social media, you can find us under Facebook, under Scoppy Magazine, also Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, S-C-A-P-I-M-A-G. Sorry if you're getting tired of hearing my voice. I'm also going to do Maureen's part, which is we run on a shoestring budget, so we also run on donations. That's not how she says it. But if you want to help us out, it would mean the world to us. You know, we exist on the idea of monthly donors. We have quite a few of those now, but can always need more. We have a ton of incentives for that. So for as little as $5 a month, you can sign up on the website, scoppymag.com/about. Go to our about section. And if our next monthly donor will receive a 30-day all-you-can-yoga gift card from B Yoga Andersonville, which we're really excited about. All of the half-wit coffee is gone, so sorry about that. That was really fun. And also, I'm trying out this thing where, as part of us developing what we want to be a co-op model for this, so y'all actually getting a lot out of the idea of donating and some sense of ownership. We're working on this thing where if you donate at a $10 a month level, you will get my photography services in our apartment specifically. That's the only contingency, is that I want to be home. we'll set up, I have a screen I set up, and I have lighting and stuff, and I have a HD photo camera, DSLR, professional grade, all that stuff. So yeah, you can set over to scoffymag.com/about. Cool. Thank you all so much for listening. Give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share. Thank you all so much for listening. Go out and make something.